in. Welcome back, everybody. This is our second class on Shemot. And last week, we began our study of Shemot. At the beginning, we essentially asked what's in a name, and we looked at all the different potential names that this book could be called. It could be called Sefer Shemot, the Book of Names, and we spoke about whether or not that's just like a coincidence because it's the first significant word in the book, or if actually the idea of names and identity really captures the heart of the book. We spoke about the idea of Exodus, which puts the focus on the leaving Egypt, versus the Ramban's idea of Sefer Geula, the Book of Redemption, which puts this idea of the whole book, and it's not just about leaving Egypt, it's also about Matan Torah and the Mishkan. We spoke about Isaiah Berlin and two sorts of freedom, freedom from, freedom too, all these interesting ideas. And we finished by looking at this really intriguing parallel between the story of the enslavement of the Jews and their building of the cities of Pitom and Ramses, and an earlier story in Chumash, which is the story of Migdal Babel, building of the Tower of Babel. Lots of linguistic similarities and thematic similarities, and we spoke about the way in which Shemot in that way is sort of a reference back to Bereshit, that Bereshit is a turning away from the east, from Mesopotamia, and Shemot is a turning away from the west, from Egypt, with the land of Israel in the middle. All very, very, very interesting. But today we are moving away from the generality, from the big picture, from the story of Am Yisrael as a whole, and we are instead coming to focus on the great individual, the Gibor of Sefer Shemot, obviously, but even more broadly of the Torah, or of Judaism as a whole, and that, of course, is Moshe Rabbeinu. So, you all have Chumash here in front of you. Do open up to Shemot Perek Bet, chapter 2 of Exodus, which is on page 296. And what I want to try and do today is to really focus on who is the young Moshe? Who is this individual? What is it about him that characterizes him, that makes him, of all people, the one who HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses to reveal himself to? To say, I want to work with you, I want to go into collaboration with you, you and me together, we're going to redeem Am Yisrael. Who is he as a young person that makes him fitting and ready for that task? And this is maybe my first ever shiur here, where I don't really have a source sheet for the shiur. I've got something at the end that I'll share, but not really a source sheet for the shiur, which is almost very terrifying for me, because normally I love to have the source sheet, this is where we're going to go. All we've got in front of us is the text. This is a really lovely shiur, which is going to pull apart for us some of the really interesting nuances of Moshe. So we're not going to read the opening parts of chapter 2. You'll remember it's a time of great crisis, of Jewish baby boys being killed. We hear of a man and a woman. They're not given names. Later on we find out they are Amram and Zipporah, Moshe's parents. Sorry, my gosh, pardon me. Amram and Yocheved. And you know, it's worth just mentioning sort of the midrashic traditions here, right? The first chapter of first verses of chapter 2, Vayelech ish mi beit Levi veikach et bat Levi v'tahar ha'isha v'teled ben, a man and a woman marry one another, the woman becomes pregnant, and they have a child. There is a whole midrashic tradition about how this isn't just a stum general description. This is the greatest act of bravery and of courage and of determination that, you know, in such a dark time as this enslavement and really this essentially genocide, this murdering of baby boys, the courage to bring children into the world, and really it's women who emerge as the heroes in the Midrashim of early on in Sefer Shemot, right? People notice that, you know, it's all about women in the opening chapters. It's Shifra and Pua, the two midwives who save the boys. It's Yocheved, it's Miriam, it's the daughter of Paro, so much so that the Gemara in Sota says that only on account of Tzadkaniyot shel oto dor, the righteous women of that generation, were Israel redeemed. All of the critical people in the story are private. Oh, thank you, Joe. All of the people in the story are women until we get to Moshe. Moshe is given up for adoption is a nice way of putting it. It's, you know, his parents send him out on the Nile, and it's Bat Paro, the daughter of Pharaoh, who sees him. Maybe let's just start from there. Where are we going? Pasuk K, verse 5 on page 296. V'tered bat poro lirchot zal hayar, daughter of Pharaoh went down to wash, to bathe in the river. V'narateha holechet al hayar, with her maidens. V'tereh et hateva, they saw the little box, the ark that Moshe was in. V'toch hasuf, v'tishlach et amata v'tikacheha, she sent her maidens to go and get it. Tiftach v'tirehu et hayeled, v'hinei na'ar boche. She opened it up, she saw the child, and na'ar was crying, presumably the child was crying. V'tachmol alav, and she had mercy over it. V'tomar, and she said, it must be miyaldei ha'ivrim zeh, a child of the Hebrews. V'tomer achoto el bat paro, says his sister, meaning presumably Miriam, says to Paro's daughter, just happens to be standing there, Ha'elech, should I go? V'karati lach isha meineket, a woman who can breastfeed him, min ha'ivriyot, v'teinech lach et ha'yered, v'tom ala bat paro lachi, she says, go v'teilech ha'almana, and the young maiden goes, v'tikrat em ha'yered, calls the mother of the child. Bat Paro is an amazing, amazing, you know, person here, you know, rebelling against her father's decree. Right, she then sorts out that Moshe's mother, or the child's mother, should look after him. V'yigdal ha'yeled, verse 10, pasuk yud, the child grows up, v'tivi'ehu levat paro, and they bring him to the daughter of Pharaoh. V'yihi la levem, and he was to her as a child. V'tikra shmo Moshe, and she calls his name Moshe. V'tomer, and she says, ki min hamayim mishitihu, because I drew him from the water. One of the most interesting questions in the whole story of Shemot, and it really starts right here, is who is Moshe? Who are the primary influences on him? Who are his parents, right? Who is his mother and who is his father? What are the potential answers to that question? Most obviously, Amram and Yocheved, not Sikara. Thank you. Amram and Yocheved are the biological parents, but in a certain sense, it's hard to call them the major influences on him in that, other than being nursed by his mother, he's separated from them at a very young age. Who are the other options to be his mother? Bat Paro, right? Not only is she the one that saves him, but, you know, explicitly in the verse, Vayihi la levem, she is the one that gives him his name. And although there is the etymology of Kimin Hamayim Moshitihu, it's known that Moshe was a name which was very prevalent amongst Egyptians in ancient Egypt. Really fascinating point. He has an Egyptian name. The Gemara in also in Sota, exactly the same sugya, which some of us would have seen last semester when we learned Kibud Av Va'em, speaking about adoption, learns from the story of Bat Paro that Kol Hamagadel Yatom Keilu Yoldo, anyone who raises an orphan is as if they have given birth to the child, so much so that there's even an opinion in Halacha from Shlomo Kluger that you can even fulfill the obligation of Peru Revu of having children through adopting children. Really, it's an astonishing thing. All of that is learned from Bat Paro. So that is just already at this stage. But who is Moshe? There are multiple candidates. Who's Moshe's grandfather, by the way? following this line of thought through? Paro, right? Meaning that is like the nuance that we always miss. Okay, but Paro can be seen as a mother figure for Moshe. But the idea of Paro as being Moshe's grandfather is such an interesting idea that the person he is rebelling against and presenting himself to and eventually killing is the person who is almost maybe was Bat Paro married? We don't know, right? You could almost see Paro himself as a sort of father figure as well, which is an amazing idea. Yeah, Pinchas.
At the time Moshe comes back, isn't it a different Paro at that point?
Possibly, arguably. I think I would say, and I will admit what I'm about to say is definitely going to require further clarification, but even if it is a different Paro, from the point of view of the way in which the story is told, I think it's just Paro. Do you know what I mean by that? As in, it's very, we don't have any name, unlike everywhere else in the Tanakh where the kings are always very much named, Paro is Paro is Paro, so much so that we almost think that's his name. But yeah, point well taken. What I'm now really interested in is really what happens now from Pasuk Yud Aleph. And I want to begin reading it with you, and then I want you to break into Chavrutot. And I will say that I'm going to share one core idea of Nechama Leibovitz, but the other very great influence on this shiur is a book written by my teacher of Moshe Lichtenstein, actually dedicated in memory of Malka's grandparents, very, very, very fitting. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, and much of the reading here comes from here. So, Pasuk Yud Aleph, let's read, and then we're going to break out into Chavrutah. Vayehi b'yamim hahem, top of page 298, beginning of Shlishi. It was in the beginning of those days, Vayigdal Moshe. Moshe grew up, Vayetze Elechav. Went out to his brothers, Vayar Basiv Lotam, saw their suffering, Vayar Ish Mitzri, Make Ish Ivri Me'echav, and saw an Egyptian man striking a Hebrew man from his brothers. Okay? What I want you to do now is to read from that verse, really to the bottom of the page, to Pasuk Kaf Aleph. And I want you to, with your chavruta, with the person sitting next to you, pay extremely close attention to words that are used in order to try and give you an insight into what Moshe is doing. Who is Moshe at this stage? What are the things that are motivating him? Right? Any word which seems superfluous, I want you to put your finger on it because a huge amount is going to come from it, and then we will come back and read together. So find the person next to you and try and get into Moshe's line. So every single word is going to be of significance in this. We'll come back together in a few minutes. Should we come back together, everybody? Let's return. Beautiful to hear all the. All the voices. So normally, what we do in our shiurim is to ask for feedback and thoughts on it. But rather than doing that, I thought it'd be nice to read the verses together. And whenever you've got something to throw it in. And I'll ask some leading questions as we go. Okay. So I read the verse. V'yigdal Moshe. Moshe grows up. V'yigdal Moshe. What's the word that jumps out to you? In the continuation of the verse, V'yetze Elechav, right? Doesn't go out and seize some slaves, seize some Jews, sees them as his brothers. How does Moshe know they're his brothers? Don't know. Did Miriam and Yocheved stay around and were there and present in his life and whispered to him? Was it clear from the way in which Paro and his servants related to him? We're not sure. But regardless, Moshe sees these slaves outside as his brothers. He is not identifying with Paro and with the Egyptians, he's identifying with the Jews. Vayar b'siv lotam, sees their suffering. Vayar Ish Mitzri, right? He is not who he identifies with, right? The Ish Mitzri is someone foreign. Makeh Ish Ivri, once again, Me'echav, from his brothers. Vayifen Kovacho, he turns this way and he turns that way. Vayal ki ein ish, and sees there is no one, no man, sees there is no one there. Anybody got a reading like Daniel?
What's the deal with the guy that he was literally hitting a second ago? Where did he go? He disappeared.
He's dead.
Sorry?
The guy that the Mitzri was hitting, he's dead.
What happens to him?
Yeah.
People think it's compelling that he's dead?
I think he's dead.
No, I was just thinking.
No, but then that's a good, if you say he's dead, that's a good, like, we Aaron and I were talking, we're like, pretty ridiculous, why did he kill this guy? He just, like, sees him, like, let's say it was an argument or something, and he just sees him, he, like, kills him.
Why does Moshe kill him?
Yeah, why does Moshe kill him? If you say he killed the Jew guy,
okay,
the Jew man, mm-hmm, Hebrew, then it makes more sense. It's like,
oh, he's responding to that.
Yeah,
okay.
But if you say he didn't, then that's pretty...
Yeah, fair. Great question, Jonathan.
No, I think there's a million factors. He just realized that the Jews are his brothers, and he got a surge of pain, seeing that they're in pain.
Okay,
and
Malka is definitely correct that regardless, Moshe is impulsive. Moshe is somebody who acts.
Yeah,
he feels it and he acts. Right? So that's
who
Moshe... I'm saying that's what you see of Moshe in this whole chapter.
I mean, if you want to offer that interpretation, if you want to look at Moshe in context...
Right, I just don't think it matters as much what happens to Jews.
So maybe... Oh, what?
In terms of...
Matters to the Jew. What happened to him? Right. That's the simple reading is what's Moshe see that no one's going to see what he's going to do. That's the simple reading. Obviously, people do see what he does because the story gets out. Moriva Rabbi of Moshe's reading is as follows: Vayal ki ein ish. He sees there is nobody there who cares. He sees there is nobody doing anything whatsoever. That here is this horrendous situation taking place of mass enslavement, of mass tyranny, of an Egyptian just being able to strike a Jew as he wishes, and nobody is doing anything at all. And Rav Moshe then goes a step further and answers Jonathan's question. Moshe's not just acting out of impulsive anger, as Malka suggests, which is completely plausible. He actually wants something to be done. He wants to stir up his echav, his brothers, to themselves rise up and throw off this tyranny. He's not just doing this for a one-off localized thing. Exactly. They were the Jews themselves were as much of the problem, had become complicit in it, and he is trying to shock them out of that. Vayachet Amitzri, strikes the Egyptian, Vayitminehu b'chol, and buries him in the sand. Vayitse b'yom hashihi. Yeah, Aaron.
Something that I just thought now, like maybe when it said, when he saw that there was no man, like he was looking at the Egyptian man and then was really looking at him, and then he's like, oh, well, you're actually not a man, because any human who subjugates another human, because it says ish mitzri, and then it says
yeah,
he looks at the mitzri, so like you lose the ish there, so like he's not.
Oh, Aaron, not beautiful shot. Everybody see that?
Yeah.
Wow, Aaron, the way in which ish mitzri, just if we look at the second line, the words ish and mitzri appear together, and in the third line, the word ish is separated from the word mitzri. The Mitzri has, as it were, lost his humanity, right? He's no longer an ish, cause ain ish. Yashar koach, Aaron. Wow. Beautiful. Yeah, fair. But it's, you go.
But even if you give it a different interpretation, you still have to say that Moshe, it also means that Moshe saw no one was around, because later it says Vayar Moshe, and it seems he only knows when the other person tells him.
What do you mean, Vayar Moshe, what?
Later,
you were honest.
Vayira,
okay.
Yeah,
but
it's later, but he only figures out later
that the matter is no.
That was no.
Okay, so wait, we're going to come to that. But Yitzeh B'yom HaSheni, he goes out on the second day. V'hine shnei anashim ivrim nitzim. There are two Hebrews struggling with one another. It's very interesting, by the way, that they're Ivrim rather than Bnei Yisrael or some other name for the Jews. I'm not quite sure of the if there's something to say there. Vayomer, and he says, L'rasha, to the wicked one. Everyone see the interesting placing of that word? Lama take re'echa. Why do you strike your friend? Right? So if in the first pasuk, the opposition was Ish Mitzri versus Echav, what's the opposition this time? Rasha versus Re'echa. Right? So different prism being used. The first time, it was the sort of the national prism, or the ethnic prism. He identifies with the Jew, with the Hebrew, and not with the Egyptian. The second time, almost seems to be a moral element involved. Again, here is Rav Moshe's idea. What are they fighting about? They're fighting. Anyone have an idea as to what they're fighting about? So Rav Moshe suggests, it's very confusing, Rav Moshe writing a book about Moshe, Rabbi Lichtenstein Jr. suggests that they're fighting precisely about what Moshe has done the previous day. If Moshe's striking of the Egyptian was seen as a call to arms, as a raise yourself up and shed yourself of this slavery, this now sows discord amongst the Jews. There are some who are saying, yes, this is it, we need to rebel. And there are others who are saying, no, this is dangerous, you know, it'll just make it worse for us. Let's keep our subjugated position. That is what they are fighting about, says Surface Moshe. Very interesting idea, and Yigal will come to your question you raised in a second. Vayomer, he says back, the Rasha, Mi samcha le'ish sar v'shofet? Who placed you as an officer, as a judge, aleinu, over us? Halahargeni ata omer? Do you want to kill me? Is that what you're saying? Kasher haragta et ha-mitzri, as you killed the Egyptian? Vayira Moshe sees, Moshe hears, Vayomar, and he says, Achein noda hadavar, behold, the matter is known. What's known? That he killed the Egyptian is the simple thing. Why is that not a very satisfactory answer? Anyone know the song Williams and Zinger? No. No Bob Dylan fans in the room?
Sing it for us.
Williams and Zinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twisted around his diamond ring finger. The song was about a man called Williams and Zinger who killed Hattie Carroll. Who was Williams and Zinger, as the song by Bob Dylan tells us? He was the son of essentially Maryland aristocracy, people of high society gathering. Who was Hattie Carroll? An African-American woman who cleared the dishes from the table, who never sat once at the head of the table. Such a classic Bob Dylan thing, rhyming table with table. It's genius, right? She had a dozen children, and in just a drunken fit of rage, with a cane, he brings his cane smashing down on her head. No provocation whatsoever. He's taken to the courthouse, and within half an hour, he's out on bail, snarling. He's got 6 months sentence, which is doesn't even have to serve, and gets away with it completely, right? If you're part of the upper class, if you're part of the elite, and all you kill is just some low person below you, you can get away with it, right? Moshe, who's a prince in the house of Paro, who's, you know, Karov l'malchut, as close to the top as it gets. Okay, he killed some Egyptian officer. It's not easy to, not such a difficult thing to get away with. Yeah, sorry, Dad. Sorry, Grandpa. You know, I was out drinking with my friends. Yeah, well, whatever. I just felt like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it could have easily happened. What's it mean, Achen noda hadavar?
Now you explain the next person.
Not just that he killed him, but the reason why he killed him. He killed him because he was a Mitzri who was striking a Jew. So now it's known as to why Moshe is doing this. Not just because he went on a drunken spree and just because he happened to feel like that. A member of the aristocracy could easily get away with that, right? Rather, he did it because he wanted the Jews to rebel. If we've already spoken about Bob Dylan, at least let me share the end of the story, because it's a tragic song about, you know, this person who just literally gets away with murder because of his position in society. Unfortunately for this murderer, his name is Williams and Zinger, which is not a very common name. And when Bob Dylan wrote a song about him, and Bob Dylan's a big name, that meant that any place that this guy ever went, everyone knew automatically who he was. The New Yorker wrote an article about Williams and Zinger like 30 years on. The guy never got a job. He, like, everywhere he went, like, hey, you're the guy who Dylan's singing about, like, you know, get the hell out of here. And his life was, like, ruined by this song, like, heart bleeds for him.
Story?
Oh, it's a completely real story, yeah. Dylan wrote a lot of these things. You should listen to the song, The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll is what the song's called. Yeah, Nina. The difference is that it would be no problem for him to get away with killing an Egyptian if he said, he said something rude to me, so I hit him, and he died. As soon as Paron knows, or as soon as it's found out, that the reason why he killed him was because Moshe wants the Jews to rise up against their Egyptian overlords, and that really Moshe is not identifying with the home he grew up in, Paron's palace, but is identifying with the Jews on the streets, then Achein Odah HaDavar, it's going to be dangerous. Avi, you question?
Just answer my question.
Ah, okay. Daniel?
How did that become known from him hitting this guy?
Well, look, there are obviously things taking place in the story which aren't told, right? Presumably Moshe didn't just kill the guy and then, I mean, he says something, if Rav Moshe is correct, that he wants to kickstart a revolution, you know, maybe he's then turning to other people, and it has become known, and now it becomes dangerous.
And Yeshua might have been alive, the one.
Sorry?
Who was being...
What did the... If, as Malka and John's discussion was, if the original Jew being struck wasn't killed...
Right.
He sees this. Quite probable. V'yishma paro et hadavar. It gets to the top. Paro hears. V'yivakesh laharog et Moshe. Wants to kill Moshe. Because now he understands why his adopted grandson has done this. V'yivrach Moshe. Moshe runs mipnei paro, away from Pharaoh. V'yishev be'eretz Midian, v'yishev al haba'er. Goes to dwell in Midian, and goes to the well. And as all of us sensitive to readers of Tanakh know, what does it mean to go to the well? Shidduch, exactly, right. This is where you go to meet your beloved. V'achen, and indeed, what do we then see? Ulochohen Midian, the priest of Midian, Sheva Barnot, had seven daughters. V'tavona, v'tidlena, v'timla'ena, v'trahatim, seven of them. They come down, they fill their buckets. L'hashkotzon avihen, to water the sheep of their father. V'yavo ha'ro'im, and the shepherds come. V'yigarshum, and drive them off. Vayakom Moshe v'yoshi'an, and Moshe rises up and defeats them, saves them, vayashketzonam, and waters their sheep. And then the story carries on. They run home. He says, "What happened?" They say, "This man saved us," etc., etc. Right? Anybody got anything to point out about this now? This third one. What does it give us, Marco? Ah, very, very good. Hold up, before we get to that, this is Nechama Leibovitz's idea. It's so simple, but it's so powerful. In the very few verses that we have read, Moshe's story is a series of conflicts he gets into. Three different conflicts where Moshe gets involved where he doesn't need to get involved, right? Moshe is someone who inserts himself in between one person or one group of people fighting with another group of people. But points out Nechama Leibovitz, each time it's for a completely different reason. Emphasized the first time is it's Echav versus Mitzri. It's the ethnic national consideration which makes him strike the Egyptian who's hitting the Jew. Moshe about protecting the Jewish people against their oppressors, against anti-Semites. The second time, it's Jew against Jew. The chiddush in the second one is that Moshe cares about what's going on within Jewish society and wants to protect that which is good, Reyecha, against that which is bad, the Rasha. Moshe cares even about what's going on internally. The third time, It's got nothing whatsoever to do with Moshe. It's got nothing whatsoever to do with the Jewish people. It's not Jew against Jew. It's not non-Jew against Jew. It is something completely foreign to him. And yet, Moshe still gets involved. Not only does he care about Jews being attacked, not only does he care about what's going on in terms of Jewish society, he cares about injustice regardless of where it's taking place. I used to describe this in terms of sort of like what charities people give to, right? You can like, you know, you can tell a lot about a person by what charities they give to. So I say this in the UK context, the charity which guards all the shuls against, you know, anti-Semitic hooligans is called the CST, Community Security Trust, right? It's like by far the richest Jewish charity in the UK, like the Prime Minister always goes to their gala dinner, etc. You can be a CST Jew, right? What is it that gets you? Protecting Jews against aggression. But there are also many many charities that work within the Jewish community. High Lifeline, Jewish Women's Aid. You can be the sort of person who cares about what's going on within the Jewish community. Alternatively, you can be somebody who gives to Oxfam or Amnesty or Greenpeace who says, what I care about are these, you know, issues that affect global things that are well beyond us. Here's the Hiddush, says Nechama Leibovitz. Moshe is every single one of these. Right? Moshe cares about every single one of these. He's somebody who justice burns within his bones. That is who Moshe is. Yeah, Avi.
If you just add on to that, it's not that it's just that he cares about all three of them, it's more that these are him acting as a leader within all three of them. And that's what God's really looking for. So that was your original question, was like, why Moshe? And that, like, this is with no one telling him what to do. That it's like each one of these three cases, he's getting himself involved. Mm-hmm. It's not just mm-hmm. that he cares about it. It's more like he sees a situation, he sees a problem, he wants to go help. He wants to go help all three. And that's where, like, that's
right.
What leader is. For
right. Of course, many people wouldn't do any of them whatsoever. You're right. You know, he takes initiative, he gets involved.
And maybe only with God helping him, he can actually
right.
do a good leader.
Yeah, fair. Very good. Malka pointed out something so interesting that happens in the next verse, Pasuk Yud Tet. Their father has already said to him, what happened? How come you're back? And they say, "V'tomarna ish mitzri hitzilanu miyad haro'im." An Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. And what are all the alarm bells ringing? Who is?
Ish mitzri was the guy that hit.
Right. We already know the word ish mitzri, right? It occurred at the top of the page. Who is the ish mitzri? He is exactly the person who Moshe killed. Exactly the person who Moshe associates with this persecution, which he has, you know, tried to rise up against and which he's fled to Egypt for.
No, this is really bad. What if Moshe was that ish mitzri at the beginning, and then he suddenly realizes what he has become, strikes himself down?
Oh, Zabari, you're making my head spin. Very interesting.
Right, this is all, this actually Fight Club, right? The Torah is really just Fight Club.
Manyan. Possibly. Very, very mechudash. Very, very interesting. But on the simple level, here is the astonishing irony that Moshe, at the same time as identifying with his Jewish father, nevertheless looks like an Egyptian. That is the way in which he physically appears. We're going to come back. So this, he says, bring him home quickly. Pasuk kaf alef, vayyo'el Moshe, lashevet et ha'ish. Moshe agrees to stay with men. V'itenet tzipora b'tol Moshe, gives his daughter Tzipora to Moshe. V'tenet ben, they have a child. V'ikra et shemor Gershom. Ki amar, because he says, ger ha'iti be'eretz nochriya, I was a stranger in a foreign land. We all know that names given to characters, certainly names given to children, should give us a huge insight into the character. There is a modern Bible commentary which says on this verse, Ger Haiti Be'eretz Nochria, this is the pasuk of Moshe's life. If you want one verse, one phrase to sum up Moshe, it's Ger Haiti Be'eretz Nochria. Wherever Moshe is, he is a stranger. In it, he is the Jew in the palace. On the street, he is the Egyptian. Are you going to kill us? The aristocrat, are you going to kill us like you killed the Egyptian? In Midian, he's the Ish Mitzri. And so interestingly, even once we get past this, and we know Moshe is the leader of the Jewish people, there is always like a foreignness and like a strangeness about Moshe that sort of separates him from the people which is such a marked characteristic. We get much less of like an insight into his personal life than we do with the Avot and we do with the stories in Bereishit. This is the verse of Moshe's life. Adkan, the young Moshe, Adkan looking at there is just one interesting thing about the name he gives to his son. Right, Gershom, ki amar gera hayiti be'eretz Nochriya. But where else have we had that word before, Gershom? No? We've all seen it?
Gershom.
Where? No, much simpler. And what we've read? Pasuk Yudzayin, Vayovo haro'im, and the shepherds come to beat up on Yitro's daughters, Vayigarshum, and he drives them away. Right, so it's interesting that Gershom seems to have a double meaning there. It says it means I'm a ger there, I'm a stranger there, but it also means that he drove them away. It also sort of captures his desire for justice. Okay, we're sort of, you would think, at the end of the shir. I've just got one question, which really I think is going to throw everything into real, real difficulty. This is chapter 2. Chapter 3 is Moshe is shepherding his sheep, and then he sees a bush burning. He says, wow. Don't normally see that. I better turn aside and see what's happening. And Hashem says to him, hey, I'm Hashem. I'm the God of your forefathers. And I've seen the Jewish people suffering. And I want to take them out. I want to save them. I want to redeem them. And you know what? I want you to be my partner. I want you to be my agent. And what are you expecting Moshe to say? Hell yeah! Absolutely, this is what I've been dreaming of, right? Wow, you're like the greatest power in the world and you want to team up with this is like what I'm so passionate about. I've had to flee for this. I like almost lost my life over it. Brilliant, we'll actually really be able to do this together. You know, this is the startup, you know, in capital injection to the startup that I wanted to be doing. Completely, let's go for it. And yet, what do we all know? Just read through chapter 3. Who are you? Who am I? Who shall I say has sent me? They won't listen to me. Lo ish dvarim anochi. I'm not a person who can speak. I'm really scared of public speaking. And then at the very end, once Moshe has said all of these questions and Hashem has answered them, Moshe then says, shalach na b'yad tishalach. Please just send them through someone else. Please find somebody else. What the hell has just happened? Chapter 2, Moshe is Mr. Social Justice, whether it's non-Jew against Jew, whether it's Jew against Jew, whether it's non-Jew against non-Jew. Every single one of them, as Nechama Leibovitz told us, Moshe cares about it. The desire for justice burns in his bones. Chapter 3, Hashem is saying, yo, I've seen you, let's partner up. And Moshe's like, no, it's completely not mine. Please just leave me alone. Anyone ever noticed this before? Chapter 2 and chapter 3 are in complete contradiction to one another. Everyone ready for the answer? Okay. The story that we've just spoken about is, we're over the page now, we're on page 300, is the beginning of Perek Gimel, right? Moshe haya ro'e etzon Yitro. Moshe was his father-in-law's shepherd, etc., etc. He comes to Choreva, vaya malach Hashem, there he sees the angel, and we get the story of the burning bush. In between that, though, we've got a few verses. Pasuk Kaf Gimel, Vayihi b'yamim harabim hahem, and it was in those many days. Vayam haMelech Mitzrayim v'yanchu bnei Yisrael min ha'avodah. Israel groan from their labor. V'izaku, etc., etc. V'ishma Elohim, God hears their cry, etc., etc. Moshe haya ro'etzon. Yamim rabim, many days. Simple question: how many days? Okay, let's play a game. How old is Moshe when we meet him? Hitting the Egyptian and then running away. We're not told, but what do you guess? What was your thought? How old do you picture him as? Sorry? 20. That's a good one. Any others? 18, 20 is the sort of thing people say. The Ramban says he's 12, which is, you know, very, very advanced. But, like, would everybody agree he's a young man? Right? He's strong. He's impulsive. He goes out, you know, sees what is wrong. He's a young man. How old is Moshe when he dies?
120.
How many years in the desert?
40.
120 minus 40?
80.
There's your riddle for... Everyone see what just happened?
Yes.
How old is Moshe at the burning bush?
80.
79. In though? Call it 79 if you want. That's short. That's maximum a year. Right? What's just happened in those three verses, or really just in Pasuk Kaf Gimel? 60 years have elapsed. There is 60 years between Moshe meeting Yitro and marrying Tzipporah, and between him seeing the fire at the burning bush. 60 years. Just boom, like that. What's happened in that 60 years? And here is, I think, Rav Moshe's real chiddush. I mean, Rav Moshe sort of like builds a midrash himself, but it's very, very compelling. Who is Yitro? Who's Yitro?
Kohen
Midyan. Not Stam, a guy, not only a non-Jew, but a priest, a religious man. What sort of a religious man is he?
A Kohen.
Okay, what does that mean? Gets an aliyah first. Says Rav Moshe that Yitro is a certain sort of religious personality, one which we meet throughout history, certainly today. It's mostly associated with the religions of the East, certainly with Buddhism, which essentially says that suffering and injustice, that's the way the world is. There is nothing at all that we can do about it. Human life is difficult, it's nasty, it's cruel. The only thing that the religious person can do is to withdraw, to become desensitized to the suffering, to try and find peace away from just the inevitable corruption of human society, because human society can't be reformed. Being a shepherd is a great job for that. Living out in the desert is a great job for that. And here, Yitro, the priest of this tradition, suddenly this young man comes flying to him, who's been beating up Egyptians, who's been fighting with Jews, who's now beaten up shepherds. And Yitro says to him, oh wow, you really want to do this stuff, right? This is what like gets you. How's it going for you? Yeah, you managed to liberate the Jews yet? Does it look like it's going really well? Looks to me like you're a fugitive. Come here, Habibi, right? Let me teach you a thing or two. Vayoel Moshe. Moshe agreed to stay with the man. It's a very, very rare phrase in the Torah. Vayoel. Seems to be some sort of like agreement that he enters into. Claims of Moshe that Moshe buys into Yitro's worldview. For 60 years, Moshe becomes the student, becomes the son-in-law, another alternative father figure of Yitro, and essentially becomes somebody who has completely given up on any potential to actually affect society, to affect change, to combat injustice. If you want just a little, anyone pick up on like a little thing in the Pesukim which seems to be a hint to this? This is it's small, but it's very neat. Right, back in our previous story, verse 17, Pasuk Yudzayin, Vayavoh HaRoim, the shepherds come, v'yigarshum, v'yakam Moshe, v'yoshian, Moshe saves them, v'yashkut sonam, v'tavona el re'u'el, and they come to their father, Avihen, v'yomen, and he says to them, madua mihalten bo hayom, why did you get here so quickly today? Everyone see why that's funny? Exactly. Back early. Meaning, what's a normal day? A normal day is they get beaten up. Right, and then they wait for the shepherds to take whatever they want, and then they can finally, once the shepherds have left, then they can feed their flocks. The fact that they come back, that they can feed their flocks normally, that's strange. Getting beaten up, I mean, there's a bit. It doesn't really speak very well to Yitro, right? That, you know, like he sends his daughters to do that every day, but sorry,
builds character.
Right. Exactly, right? Exactly, gets them used to seeing that suffering is just part of this world. And so the Moshe at the snare, the burning bush that Hashem meets, is a very, very different Moshe from the one that we've been with for the most part today. Moshe, age 80, is not just an older man, he's a completely different religious figure from Moshe, age 20. And his whole hesitation is about coming back to the idea that, in fact, we can have an impact on this world. Even if we struggle with ourselves, certainly it's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from us, and he's going to do it with us. And he says, I want to do this with you. Because Moshe has for now just come to terms with the fact that slavery and justice is a part of this world. He's withdrawn into the wilderness, and so too he has given up on it and has really in many ways severed himself from the story of Am Yisrael. So that is our reading in. Just one quick midrash to share with you. I have to have one sort of source sheet. This is midrash. I feel I say this midrash the whole time, but it's such a powerful midrash, and you can use it the whole time. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, gonna die in the desert. And in the midrash, Moshe argues with Hashem a lot about that. He is able to think of, so he says to, at one point his argument is, even if I'm going to die in the desert, at least let me be buried in the land of Israel. And he says, I've got a raya, I've got a proof. Who else died outside of Israel but gets to be buried in Israel?
Yosef,
right? They carry his bones through the desert for years and years. Look at this midrash. Amar Rabbi Levi, Lot Amar Lefanav Ribono Shel Olam, said Moshe, Master of the Universe, Atzmotav Shel Yosef Nichnasu La'aretz, the bones of Yosef get to go into the land, Va'ani, but me, Eini Nichnas La'aretz, I don't, at least let me be buried there. Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is such a painful midrash, and if it's telling us more about Yosef or about Moshe, I'm not sure, it tells us about both. Mi Shehodeh Ba'atzo, he who admitted that this is his land, Nikbar ba'atzo, will be buried in his land. O mishalohode ba'atzo, but he who denied that this was his land, Eino nikbar ba'atzo, will not be buried in his land, in the land of Israel. Who are we talking about? Yosef hode ba'atzo. Yosef admitted that the land of Israel is his land. Minayim, from where? Gvirato, his mistress, Potiphar's wife, Omeret, she says, Ra'u, hivi lalu ish ivri, l'sachek bi, you bought this Hebrew man to taunt me. He didn't deny it. He didn't say, no, I'm not Jewish. Ella, rather, the next chapter, he then says to the butler and the baker, Ganov gunavti me'eretz ha'ivrim, I was stolen from the land of the Hebrews. Such a person who proudly admitted that this is his land, nikbar ba'atzo, will be buried in his land. Then quotes the verse in Yoshua about his being buried. Halfway through the second to last line, At, but you, Moshe, shelo hodita ba'atzecha, who didn't admit that this is your land, shall not be buried in your land, in the land of Israel. Ketzad, where do we see this? The daughters of Yitro, Omrot, say to their father, Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu Miyad Haro'im, an Egyptian man saved us from the shepherds. V'hu Shomea, and you heard this, V'shotek, and you were silent. You didn't say, no, I'm not Egyptian, actually, I'm a Hebrew. Lefikach, therefore, Lo nikbar ba'atzo, he was not buried in his land. Oof. What a painful midrash. What a difficult midrash. And it tells us just about as much about Moshe. Okay, yeah, please. Daniel, then Avi.
He didn't hear.
Very. Yeah, fair. People pick up on what Daniel's saying?
Yeah.
Everyone get it? Daniel's right. What are the verses that we read, according to the Peshat, they go back to their father and they say, Ish mitzri hitzilanu, Moshe's not there, because Yitro then says, well, where is he? You've got to bring him home, right? So, you're right, the Midrash isn't fair. But so what? The Midrash still knows what it's going to say, right? It's still making its point. Avi, was that what you wanted to say?
No, you're comparing, like, apples and oranges here. Like, Yosef lived in Israel for, like, 18 years of his life. So he actually had a homeland of Israel. Moshe was born, basically, with Pharaoh taking him out of the river. So there was no homeland for Moshe to relate back to when he was... like growing up, or that, like his homeland, he didn't know anything. His homeland, like in his knowledge, so that's like basically you're telling Moshe he cannot be buried in Israel because of lack of knowledge he never had, where Yosef had the knowledge the whole time for the past 18 years of his life, like where he should have. You grow up in Israel, but he never grew up. So I don't like this conclusion so much.
Well, I agree. It's very, very. It's super harsh. Malcolm.
What about people in Europe who never set foot in Israel and then wanted to run away to their homeland?
And he definitely, and he does have a
or
Jewish identity.
Here, who've never been to Israel, and so, you know, they all, yeah.
Micah?
I think that's a reason to say it's not, you don't know.
Yeah, but they're Jews, though.
Yeah.
And they call this.
Right.
Moshe didn't know he was a Jew.
Yeah,
he does. Yeah. He sees them as his son.
Well,
if you
read it like that.
Okay, come on. Micah?
Yeah, it's very paradoxical. Yosef is like the ultimate assimilator.
So let's just finish and summarize it and leave it with this.
Yeah.
I think we often, you know, we think of pairs in Tanakh. Abraham and Yitzchak are a pair. We compare the two of them. Eliyahu and Elisha are a pair. We compare the two of them. We often don't think of Yosef and Moshe, right? Because one's Bereishit, one's Shemot. But actually, they're back-to-back characters. You finish the story of Yosef, and you immediately meet Moshe. Both of them got two sons. Both of them, really interesting relationship to their people. And you can almost see them as opposites. Yosef is the Jewish leader who spends his whole life, or at least the vast majority of his life, away from his people. Right, very critical years. He's there alone in Egypt. Painful, difficult years. And yet, he retains his identity. So people see him as the first diaspora Jew, a lonely person who nevertheless keeps that passionate connection, even though he's at a distance. Moshe, who, once you're past the early years, which we've been discussing, his whole life, you know, from basically after this chapter to the end of the Torah, is spent with the Jewish people, is always a bit of a stranger to them. To go back to that line, Ger Hayiti Be'eretz Nochriya, he calls himself Gerushim because he's a stranger in a foreign land. That is the pasuk of Moshe's life, that he is the person who's the very heart of the Jewish people, who, you know, arguably, who creates the Jewish people, who brings the Torah down, takes them from Egypt, splits the sea, who the Rambam says is, you know, a prophet on a level like no other. And yet there is always something that's just a little bit different that separates between him and the rest of the people. It's one of the ultimate paradoxes of Moshe's life, and one which we're going to carry on playing with. Just a little sneak preview for next week. Next week we are going to be discussing arguably the strangest story in all of the Tanakh, possibly, which is once finally Moshe agrees to go back to Egypt. Everyone know what I'm going to say? Finally, he's agreed to. Where are we? We are in chapter 4, bottom of page. Where are we? Bottom of page 310, chapter 4, verse 24. Vayehi b'derech b'malon, was on the way back to Egypt at a station. V'yifkashehu Hashem. Hashem meets him. V'yivakesh hamito, and tries to kill him. Right? Time that Hashem tried to kill Moshe. That is our story for next week. Why, after finally convincing him, Hashem decides to kill him. And I promise you, you will emerge from that shir saying, wow, that is it. That is completely, that makes perfect sense. That is beautiful. That is no longer a strange story. It is a completely elegant story. And I promise you, you will be like that if you come. Have a great week, everyone. Yishar koach.